Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Indie Heads Podcast. I'm your host, Maddie, a.k.a. Recon AG. On this week's podcast, we have...
I am Jake at JWild55. Follow me to see me retweet one thing every 3 days.
I'm AJ at And Moser on Twitter. If you like video games, follow me for hot takes that are never, ever good.
I'm Stefan at Stefan Mikowski on Twitter, except like full disclosure, I haven't been on social media in like a month. So you guys can find me at my house. You go back through every episode I've done and just take the first letter of every album I mentioned, it spells out my address. So
shit.
I'm a little guessing game for you guys.
True heads know.
I'm not a true head. It's your boy Wilfer Thrill. You know what it is. More life is on the way.
More life on the
Keep
way.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, that's the big talk today. We got more life on the way.
So yeah, we almost delayed this episode because more life was on the way, and we had to wait for it to not be on the way so we could, you know, talk about it and the way how it is. So hey, welcome to the podcast, everybody. We got a great show lined up for you. We got some great news to talk about. We got some good albums we're talking about, and let's just get this shit popping. The first news story I want to talk about is that I saw Moonlight last night for the first time, and I really enjoyed it. I think we might, if we have time after we do this podcast, I want to do a little discussion on it because I really liked Moonlight, and also the Chopped and Screwed classic Man is a goddamn banger.
Oh, it slaps.
That's the first news story.
And it's a sin that film won Best Picture, and we still don't have an official release of that song.
I know. Well, I think that does suck. We need it. Okay. More life on the way? No, fuck more life. We need classic Man Chopped and Screwed official on the way.
The streets are hungry.
Exactly. Anyways, let's get to the real news. Number one, with a bullet point, the Velvet Underground and Nico recently turned 50 this week. And,
Lou Reed turned 50? Lou Reed's 50?
yeah, Lou Reed, he's 50. He's,
Happy birthday, man. I love that
guy. Happy birthday.
Yeah, I hope he kicks. I hope he just stays kicking around making music forever.
I think we were planning on doing an album commentary for this, but like a very last minute decision, like, hey, let's do an album commentary for it, and then we just couldn't schedule it. So, but yeah, it's a classic. I mean, come on, now.
It's the most important rock album ever made, if you ask me, in my opinion.
I think it's definitely the rock album that like resonates most with the contemporary sensibility. Like you can listen to that album now and see where like music now came from in a weird way. Like it's probably like the definition of seminal in regards to music history.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I mean, it set the template for indie rock.
Yeah, I'll also say it's very very strange that there are good albums older than my parents. Like I feel like for some reason that's my threshold. It's like, is this older than my dad? Probably not good. But this one is. So there you go.
The Underground and Nico, it's 50 years old and it's still banging to this day. It's like Susan Sarandon.
Hell yeah, brother.
Let's go. Okay. Oh boy. All right. Let's get to the second little news. This has been a pretty slow week for news. There really hasn't been that much this week to discuss.
South by Southwest has been
racist.
That's where the industry has been.
I think, yeah, we missed that last week. We probably should have discussed that last week, because I know if we had Dylan on, he'd be ranting about it.
Oh, that thing. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's
old news now. It's old news now.
Yeah.
So let's get the next news story. Gorillaz, the Phase 4 track list, or really essentially their fourth album, has presumably leaked. It includes a bunch of features, which includes, I'm going to open this link real quick and just rattle off all the features. Dram, Vince Staples, Anthony Hamilton, Grace Jones, Brandon Markell Holmes, Peven Everett, Benjamin Clementine, Mamus Staples, and Pusha T, De La Soul, Kilo Keish, Zebra Cats, and Imana Voshana, Pop Con, Jamie Principal, Zebra Cats again, Kali Uchis, Peven Everett, Danny Brown, and Kalela, Rag and Bone Man, Zebra Cats again. They really like those Zebra Cats, those gorillas. I don't understand why. Ray Belk, Carly Simon, and Ginny Bath of Savages. That's a...
Carly Simon, damn. That's a weird...
That's yeah. a weird fat one. Playlist. This is a fat feature list.
No kidding.
Before we get into any of the merits of this like lineup, is there any way this Gorillaz album isn't going to be the wildflower of this year? Like, realistically,
oh, absolutely.
Is there any way?
I can see it.
It's also going to be the wildflower in terms of fucking 25 tracks, Gorillaz. I'm so sick of long albums screwing up my Last Defense stats. I listened to Solange once, and it's the top of my 4x4 for like 3 months.
which is all that matters.
That's true. Yeah, all that matters are statistics and making sure your people see them and validate me on social media for them.
You gotta run up those streaming numbers, man. That's just more life.
My last FM has never worked, and I feel like it's just kind of sparing me from all of that having to like sweat about my Scrabbles. Anyway, yeah. Gorillaz, I think
it's gonna be good. Wait, I have way too.
Oh, Jake is lagging. Jake is coming to us from Spain, by the way, so he might have some issues on this.
Yeah,
podcast.
Sorry. Across the pond. That's probably my issue.
Our very own Hemingway.
Yeah. That's right.
The old man in the leg.
What were you going to say, Jake? Jake?
Well, it's no longer relevant, but I was going to say I also don't do the Last FM thing, which is probably a good thing because my personality is like way too obsessive to have to keep track of that. That'd just be another thing.
Oh, it has not been healthy for me at all, but fuck it, I'm going for it.
All right, let's get to our next news story. Really, it's a double feature news story. AJ, you want to take this one for me?
I don't like either of these stories, honestly.
Okay, well, who wrote this down on the schedule?
I wrote the second one. We got really bad news this week because the 1975 are talking about making another album, and they want it to be their OK Computer or The Queen is Dead, which is, of course, you do. I don't. What else do you say there?
I feel like you don't say anything. Like the easiest way to make your album not as good as those albums is to say that.
Yeah.
That's how the Killers got screwed with Sam's Town, because they set the expectations too high. Saying that would be the greatest rock album of our generation.
Which it is, but, you know.
Yes. No, I think, I mean, like, in a way, I think the 1975 has potential to, like, yeah, I think they have the potential, but I don't know if they can make OK Computer. That's just a preposterous claim.
The thing with the 1975 is that this is to all the haters out there, all the 75 haters out there, and I'm not talking the number of haters. I'm talking the year. They make really great pop music. Like the straight up pop songs they make, they're fucking fantastic. Like, hey, but I don't think Matthew Weber's fucking last name understands.
Matt Healy.
God, what? Why are they all Matts? Matt Bellamy, Matt Bealey.
Where do you get Weber from?
Anyways, Matt. What Matt Weber's fucking last name is? I already forgot it because like Matt Healy.
Healy.
What Matt Healy needs to understand is that like, I did listen to their last album, which I'm not going to say in full because it's a goddamn stupid album name. What I'm going to say is that he needs to understand where his limitations are. Really, the band themselves. Does he understand? Your limitations are in making great pop music and making great pop songs. So, like, stick to that. Make great pop songs, all right? Again,
I think I might be hotter than you on them. I think their big problem with me, I think, is dynamics. They never go of like a mezzo forte. It's just all like the same intensity, same volume the entire time. I'd be like, you need more dynamics. Like the songs themselves are good.
Yeah, I think there's a category of band that's becoming like increasingly prevalent of just like well constructed but inconsequential music. Like no one's coming across a 1975 album, no matter how good it is, and being like, "Oh, this changed my perception of what music can do." Which is like, those the albums.
You don't listen to Enemy though, Stefan. You don't read Enemy, so I don't know.
No, don't read Enemy. Don't read Enemy.
Have you read it, Ian Cohen's Twitter feed?
Like recently or at all?
Yes.
Not recently at all. Yes.
He's pretty hot on them. There's a lot of music critics like Megan Garvey. She was also hot on them. On like, there's a certain like group of people that are like huge fans of them. They're kind of a band that's really divisive. Like you either love them or you hate them.
I see what they do, and I just am not a fan of it. But I see the appeal.
Yeah, definitely.
Basically, Matt Healy, instead of trying to make an OK Computer or The Queen is Dead, just make a hot fuss. Like, boy, that's all I do.
You know, you can't do that. That's easier said than done.
Okay, yeah. I'd say
more, I want to give them props.
Or maybe. I don't know. But AJ, continue.
At least they didn't say they were going to make their Age of Odds or Yeezus.
They're Kid A.
They're Kid A, yeah.
Wait, man.
Wait until
1975 LP4. Wait till they start hyping that up.
Wait till it hits indie heads.
Wait till that happens.
I will say, like, my fantasy joke on indie heads comment threads that I've been, like, waiting for an opportunity to do is just, like, the next time Death Grips put out a new song, to just comment, like, sounds pretty electronic and embracive. This could be their next Age of Odds.
Oh, hey, I might have to steal that, Stefan. I'm sorry. I might have to steal it.
You'll probably get on it first. You can have that.
Because I have to browse new because I'm a mod. I have to make sure that all the I have to make sure to shut down all the original music and make sure people aren't spamming their shit. Anyways, let's keep it. That's about it on news. Is there anything that we missed that we want to talk about?
Arcade Fire did a live show and they didn't play any new music.
So that's not news at all.
There's your weekly Arcade Fire report. Oh, hey, they exist. Right. It's news to me.
Do we want to briefly touch upon this new Weezer single? Or no?
I don't want to touch that at all.
It's bad. It's bad.
To our main topic.
Thank you, Will.
Things that are good, i.e. not the new Weezer single.
Main topic.
30-second moan in the best way.
Oh, boy. Anyway, main topic is essentially our quarter one catch-up, or really our quarter one album of the year so far, but kind of mostly a catch-up, but on stuff that we like, pretty much. So far, I haven't listened to anything that I've actively, like, really disliked this year, because I think I've avoided stuff that I'm like, here's the thing, I'm not going to listen to new Big Sean, because I know I'm going to hate new Big Sean, so I'm not going to listen to it. However, I am going to listen to albums I think I'm going to like, and generally, hey, I like them. And speaking of albums I like, I'm going to start us off on this main topic. We're talking about a couple albums. The first of which is my album of the year so far, which is a little surprising. Priest, Nothing Feels Natural. I think I talked about this on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and I'm talking about it again. And yeah, I think it's my album of the year so far. Just because I just don't think there's been anything that's come out that's really, like, captured my attention. You know, where there's albums that's come out, and I generally, you know, I listen to it for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then I kind of toss them. But I've consistently come back to Nothing Feels Natural so far this year, compared to other albums I've, you know. Just because there's never a time where at least one of the songs is my mood. Where there's some days where I literally just want to listen to Puff. There's some days where I literally just want to listen to, you know, No Big Bang or Appropriate. But generally, the album is just, it's a very well-rounded post-punk record. And there's a lot of variety in the sounds. There's a lot of really, really cool stuff going on. And I gotta call out someone. Anthony Fantano, you motherfucker, saying this is some generic-ass post-punk shit that's forgettable. Fuck you, piece of shit. But if you want to come on this podcast again, it's not going to happen. May happen. I don't know. We kind of need the publicity, so we'll reconsider. Anyways, but yeah, Nothing Feels Natural. It's kind of hard talking about it, just because it's just, that's what it is. It's just really good post-punk. Like, hey, it's really well done. There's a lot of really good songwriting here. Shit, I'm trying to remember the names of the singer. I really should have came more prepared, but other than this is just a really great album. But that's all I can really say. It's just really great post-punk. Just very well-timed because, you know, the Trump administration. And
I've heard of it.
Yeah. God. Shit. That's all I gotta say. Priest, Nothing Feels Natural. Give it a shot.
FDT, baby.
Has anyone else listened to Nothing Feels Natural and can help me out?
I've listened to it, but
yeah, I really
I have to err on the side of Fantano just in general, but I don't really like post punk for the most part. So
yeah, one album that I can talk about a bit more in depth that I thought was going to be my album of the year, but ended up being still a pretty good record. Tim D'Arcy, Saturday Night. When Tall Glass of Water came out back in November. I fucking love that song. I think I listened to it like 40 times in a week because I loved it that much. It was just so addictive. It ended up being placing in my top 10 for my songs of the year. And, God, the single was so good. And then Still Waking Up came out just a few months later, like in January. And I loved that single, too. And I was like, damn, this is just going to be like a really good kind of throwback rock album, kind of similar to something like Angel Olsen would do, like kind of maybe similar to kind of like Burn Your Fire for No Witness in kind of the scope of that record. And instead I got something that's a bit more out there. It's a bit more experimental than the singles let on, which is kind of, it takes a little bit to kind of, for how much I listened to Tall Glass of Water and Still Waking Up, it definitely took a little bit for me to like figure out, like to come to the realization that, oh, this album isn't that, but it's this, which is sort of this kind of a hodgepodge of experiments that Tim Darcy has kind of have been cooking up in his brain for, I guess, the past few years now. And there's still a lot of great tracks on here. Joan Part 1, Part 2 is great, especially Part 2 with that really creepy section where you have these kind of like, the droney, sort of the very kind of whispery guitars and Tim Darcy's kind of affected tone in his voice. And then also the just goddamn amazing. I really love the track, Not You Felt Comfort. Found My Limit. It's a really great kind of creepy folk song. And also there's just some really good hard rock stuff in here. Like You Felt Comfort is really great coming after Joan Part 1, Part 2. It's just like a real... like kick in the face, and Saturday Night is also a really great kind of really sort of eerie, creepy track with some really great vocals, and it's a little it's slightly disappointing, but it's only because I set my expectations like way too high, but yeah, Saturday Night, definitely give it a listen. Very excited for new Ott this year. If this album is any indication, the new Ott album is going to be fucking incredible. As I think the consistent issue that people have had with Ott that I haven't quite, it hasn't affected me that much, at least, has been that that Ott, you know, they don't really quite have a sort of, they don't quite have like a unique sound. They still kind of drown in their influences a little bit, but I do think with this new Tim Darcy album, this new Ott album might finally be like the one that like really separates them from their influences. So yeah. That's all I gotta say. We'll just kick it to AJ. You want to give some thoughts on some of those?
All right. We all know what the true album of the year is. It's Japandroid's Near the Wild Heart of Life, but that's been discussed by me to death. So I'm gonna touch on some of the albums that really surprised me the most this year. And the first one I wanna dig into is Yours Conditionally by Tennis, which was. I wouldn't have listened to this album if not for the Vital Me Please record of the month, so shout out to those folks for keeping it down over there. But this is a nice amalgamation of all of the kind of summery, hazy sounds that occupy the indie space, and so you've got a little bit of Beach House, a little bit of Angel Olsen, and then like a little bit of Mac DeMarco. But it's also got these, you know, I don't want to say feminist, but female empowerment leading lyrics. And it's just a really fresh take on sort of an album that really is just comprised of like love songs and songs about relationships. And there's a really cool story behind the record about how it was all recorded on or written on this boat while they were sailing across. I believe the band's like a couple and they were sailing across a sea and wrote all these songs together. And it just came out, I think, really, really cool. If you like Beach House or Angel Olsen, I would definitely say that this album is going to be right up your alley. And it's sort of like the Whitney album from last year in that I think I appreciate like the sound of this album more than any of the specific content on it. But it's a really nice just like package, a really nice album to just kind of listen to in one sitting and let it occupy a space that reminds you that or makes you forget that there's 2 feet of snow outside. Thank you, Michigan. The other album I wanted to talk about is Alison Crutchfield's Tourist in This Town, which is in like an Alabama Shakes vein of a little bit rock, and then it's like, ooh, getting a little bit bluesy in there, but she's got a real, real good attitude. Again, really song strong writing on here, really empowering lyrics, if you want to get into that again. And songs like I Don't Ever Want to Leave California and Dean's Room have this really classic rock vibe to them that, again, I don't think is represented that much in modern indie, and I think this album sounds pretty distinct from anything else I've heard this year or even in a few years past. So I would say give that one a check out if you like guitars.
Right. I like guitar.
All right,
Jake.
Cool.
Yeah. Hit us from Spain.
I will hit you from Spain. So, first album I'm going to talk about is Hang by Foxygen, and I'm not going to say a lot about it. I'm not a huge Foxygen fan. I liked 21st Century Ambassadors, but that was about the extent of my Foxygen knowledge. But with that, I think this album's really interesting, even just from a sonic angle. Everything's really over the top. It's really vibrant. A lot of the arrangements sound like show tunes. You know, Sam, what's his name? Sam Francis? I can't remember. But he seems to have a very like flexible vocal style. It does a good job of kind of complementing the constantly changing arrangement. I don't know. I think America is still probably one of my favorite songs of the year for a lot of those reasons. It just kind of twists and turns and builds, and it's very colorful, and there's cool piano and harpsichord breakdowns right in the middle of the song. And I don't know, I just think it's really interesting. It kind of wears its 70s pop Randy Newman influences a bit on its sleeves, but it's just a really fun album to listen to. I don't know if you guys heard it.
Yeah, this album's one of my favorites for sure. It surprised me because I've never really liked Foxygen before, but I talked about it a little bit on an earlier episode. I love like the showiness and just like the overindulgence of the record with all of the orchestral movements and just like really like Broadway inspired shit that this album does. It's weird as hell, but I really like it. I think it's Foxygen's best by far.
I parrot all those points.
As someone who's like not a Foxygen fan and listened to And Star Power for a little bit and was like, oh, we're not going to do that again. Like, would this be worth checking out?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's definitely like,
yeah.
Here's the thing with In Star Power. Even though I don't really listen to Foxygen that much, that was like for their fans. It was just a weird experiment for them. It was like they basically America or not America. Hang is overindulgent in all the right ways, while In Star Power is overindulgent in all the wrong ways. And also, Hang is only like 30 minutes long, and In Star Power is fucking 80 minutes long.
Well, I was going to say, listen, if you're going
to I've actually never listened to Star Power.
If you're going to experiment, don't do it for 80 minutes. Like, if there's a chance it could go wrong, don't make it go on for that long. Get in and out. Make your failures brief.
But yeah, I definitely, Hang, it's also just different where, like, it's very, like they were saying, at times it feels like you're listening to a musical, you know, because the way that the songs are arranged. It's really good. It's definitely worth a listen.
Totally.
Okay, cool. Put it on the list.
Yeah. Really briefly, I'm going to in the band Remo Drive. They're like a pop punk kind of emo-y band for my pop punk family out there. But their greatest hits just came out, I think it was either yesterday or today, and I listened to it, and it's really good. Every song is a banger, and they're all really catchy and fun.
I need to give this a listen because I think it's on my Spotify. Again,
and they're from Minnesota. Minnesota
represent.
Yeah, totally. Represent Minnesota. They're from Bloomington, so good stuff.
Oh boy, this last one. Oh boy.
So moving on, we have new Mount Eerie album. A Crow Looked at Me. So I guess I'll start it off. This is either. Depending on if you count the Microphones records, it's like his 8th or 12th or 12th album, and it's really tough to review music like this or to talk about it for me in any way, like through any, you know, because I think the songs are moving and beautiful and heartbreaking, which they are, but you know, this is obviously something that I can't, you know, hopefully I'll never be able to fully empathize with. You know, I don't have any of the necessary life experiences to fully understand what, you know, Phil is going through / had to go through in order to write and record these songs. But, you know, I'm sure as everyone knows by now, the whole kind of narrative arc of the album is based around the death of his wife. And pretty much everything you expect to be in that regard. It's basically just like 40 minutes of pure unadulterated, like just devastation, light or glimmer of hope. It's just kind of the slow, heavy sinking realization that, like, you know, death is real and permanent and inevitable, and it's not there, and, you know, life is like too arbitrary and random to ground your anger and sadness anywhere. So instead you're just kind of left stranded, going through all these horrible and incredibly personal mental processes and just displaying them for the world to see, like his diary, basically. You know, there's stuff about him, like, crying on the side of logging roads and leaving his windows and doors open. And I don't know, this is a really, really taxing album. It's really hard to listen to. And that's not to take away from it, like, musically, because the songwriting is still really beautiful. And certainly nothing on this album is but you gotta, like, you gotta be in a good place to just sit down and take this all at once. I don't know if have stuff to add.
I listened to this. I've never listened to a Mount Erie or Microphones album before, all right, shoot me, but I did give this a listen yesterday, and yeah, you just, even from that first listen, it's a tough listen, because you really just feel the utter defeat in Phil Evram's voice. You just really feel that. You know, I love plenty of records that have come out about, you know, breakups, or again, I think, or Carrying Lowell. I love Carrying Lowell. I think it's a very good album, but my issue with it at the end of the day was just sort of like, I don't know. It just there was something that kept me from fully being able to kind of. It's kind of tough to say what my problem with Carrie Lowell is. I just, there was just something that kept me from,
Lowell.
From like, shut up, Lowell, sorry. There's just something that kept me from like full on really just like loving that album and really kind of getting deep into it. But I think for this Mount Erie album, I do see myself being able to get into it a bit more, because it, just the immediacy of it, where I think Carrie Lowell, when it came out, his mother had passed away 3 years ago, and it seemed like these songs were sort of building up inside of him for all those years. But in this case, it's only been about 9 months since, you know, Genevieve died. And that just makes this album, just the impact of it, just even like, even rougher to listen to. Cause it's just like, it's still so, so immediate and so soon.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I was reading in
You're reading an article.
I was just gonna say, I was reading an interview with him, and yeah, he was saying that a lot of the songs he basically started writing immediately, and even in songs to like reference or an event, like it's been 11 days, and it's just really like it's just not far removed from it at all. It was like right there and right, and he wrote them.
Yeah, I think like the most refreshing thing about this album for me is that it does depart from that kind of like Carrie and Lowell vein, and that I think like there's a tendency as soon as like a tragedy happens and you turn it into a piece of art, then it's like, oh, well, it's okay because it made art. And he just like really resists that impulse on this record. Like his take here is straight up just like, no, like this death was arbitrary and unfair and I'm suffering from it. And like,
yeah,
there is no recovery.
To hop in at one point, he talks about how she died of cancer, and he says she was murdered at one point, and that's one of the lines that just like really stuck out. I mean,
yeah,
everything sticks out on this album, but that's one where I got into his headspace a lot more and just sort of understood where it was coming from.
Yeah, there's a lot of lines on this album that just like leap out at you and straight up just like make your heart stop.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I think another thing that you were talking in the chat yesterday, AJ, was that you can really feel the spaces that he recorded in, where I think apparently he recorded the entire album in Genevieve's, like her like art studio pretty much, or just only in the house. So
it's all her instruments too.
So
I think that's another thing that makes the carrying. That makes me appreciate this album a lot, is that I don't even want to compare it to Carrie Lowell, because it's just, they're both very, just, you know, it's weird. It's just weird. It's a natural.
I mean, Carrie Lowell, it's like, it's sad to see like everyone's parents die, you know? That's insensitive, but it's a fact.
Which is why I think like, Carrie Lowell has that sense of like, this is sad, but it's a kind of sad that like, I mean, people talk about and understand and can share it, but This one is much more voyeuristic in the sense that it's like, this is really fucking sad because you're looking into this specific window.
Yeah, like, this is an album that definitely makes you feel, like, guilty for listening to it, and I think very intentionally. Like, again, part of his kind of, like, thesis statement with this album is, like, this album shouldn't have to exist. Like, I shouldn't have to be doing this. But, like, still he does, and his decision to do so, I think, is, like, really interesting given his, like, resistance to the idea.
Yeah. He touched on that in that same article I was reading. He said that he was just writing. He probably would have been fine if it weren't released, because he, you know, he wrote them for himself, I guess, as his own catharsis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the decision to release them is
what he's always done.
Mm-hmm.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very interesting decision.
I don't know. Sum it up for me.
Jake, your lag is like talking over Stefan trying to say some stuff right now.
Oh, I just keep thinking you're done, and then it starts lagging again.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm misreading to you.
All right. I was just gonna say that I think the best line to sum it up for me is in the title, or not the title, but the first track, "Real Death," when he said, "Like when real death enters the house, all poetry is dumb," and it's just, I don't know, just listening to this album, trying to listen to some other album, the problems that whatever anyone else is dealing with just seem kind of futile and like contrived matter. Like, this is just a real poignant thing.
Mm-hmm. I think there's not really much more to say other than if you find it, I guess listen to it, but again, just be very prepared that this is like, it's a rough listen. It's really just, it's tough. Cause I try to distract myself a little bit while listening to it. Cause I usually, you know, while I'm listening to music, I'm usually like, you know, doing stuff on my computer, but like there's multiple times listening to this where I just had to stop what I was doing and just like listen into what he's saying. Just because, again, it's tough. It's really tough. And also musically, like, it's still musically like very solid. The songwriting is very good, but yeah, it's just, this, I think, Stefan, I think you said it, this record should not have to exist. I'm not glad that it exists.
Before we leave the topic, I just want to say one more thing. In the song "Soria Moria," he does a callback to the Glow Part 2, where he says, "I went back to feel alone there," and he keeps the melody the same as the moon and the lyrics the same. And when I first heard it, I like, even though it freaked me out.
Yeah, it feels weird to, like, again, given the nature of existence, praise this album. But, like, it takes it a different take or a different path to depicting death in music. And, like, I will say, you know, despite my discomfort with saying so, this is probably, like, my true album of the year right now, even after a couple listens. It's just like, jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not much more to say. Stefan, speaking of, do you have some albums you want to talk about?
Sure. First one I'll talk about, which, like you were saying, Maddie, earlier, that, like, there's not a whole lot of albums that have stuck with you this year, and I'm feeling kind of the same way we were. Like, I've listened to a decent amount of albums, but they've all just kind of been, like, they're just come and gone. Like, I've listened to them once and been like, okay, that was cool, and, like, nothing has ever really stuck out to me, and I think why, like, up until yesterday when Mount Eerie leaked, essentially, like, this was my album of the year, because, like, it was an album that stuck out in my mind that, like, I thought about and kept coming back to. It is the new Sun Kill Moon, Common as Light and Love, as we talked about on the podcast before. This album is so ridiculous. I can't believe this album exists, and I don't understand why it exists, and I don't understand why it's my album of the year. Like, there are just... I mean, why it is because there are, like, so many confounding things about this record. And like we've talked about in the chat and stuff, this is another album that I felt weird calling my album of the year, because it's hard to call it, like, quantifiably good. Like, there's a lot of moments on this album that are bad. Like, they're not good creative decisions. And yet, like, they're so fascinating that I'm just, like, enthralled listening to them. Like, What are you doing, Mark Causal? Like, what? I'm just so astounded. Like, oh man, probably an emblematic moment of that is like Vague Rock song, where like he out Father John Misty's Father John Misty in terms of like doing ironic laziness. And he just fucking dives into a monologue about Syrian refugees. Is like, and yet it's still filled with that same kind of like just trademark Mark Kozlik like sensitivity and empathy that is so at odds with like his just utter tone deafness and lack of consideration for the world as a whole.
You said it in the chat best to talk about the Lone Star.
Yeah.
Like when he's writing about transgender rights and he calls them transgenders.
God, there's so many moments of like that where Mark Kozlik like tries to be nice and just can't. Which again,
it's
normally
cute.
You turn me off.
It's cute. Like,
it really is on this album. I really love it. Like in the past, like on Universal Themes, like Mark Kozlik's kind of like, I don't care whether you like this or not shtick that he's been doing post Benji. Like that really rubbed me the wrong way, but I really love it on this album for some reason. I don't understand the difference and why it works. Cause arguably this album is.
He's doubled down.
Yeah.
Like, I said, yeah.
It's worse now.
He has achieved singularity.
True. This is
quite literally doubled down. Considering this is a double album. That is, which might remind you guys again, 2 hours and 10 minutes long of Mark Kozlik just talking about whatever he feels like talking about. If he wants,
and I am aware, and I love it.
If he wants to read a letter from a from like a college student promoter, he's gonna do it. He just does it on the album. It's just and it works. It's great.
No one listened to the Sun Till Moon Yezu collaboration last year, which is a shame because like I think that's better than Universal Themes. But he started doing that then when he was like,
"Oh yeah, I love that
song." I'm just going to read fan mail, and like again, somehow he makes it work. And like, there's an interesting moment on Sun Till Moon Yezu when like he's reading this like very it's so weird because it shouldn't be such a self-congratulatory gesture, and yet like his being touched by these people reaching out to them like comes across so genuinely in the performance that like, oh man, I don't know, this album, it again, it shouldn't work, it kind of doesn't work, but I still love it and I'm fascinated by it.
It's definitely the most fun album that's come out this year to talk about because he's given us so much meme material to talk about. There's so much like fucking Phil. I mean, obviously there's the obvious ones, Philadelphia Cop and the hilarious skit. And then you just have, like, I think the song that really exudes laziest the most next to Vague Rock Song is probably 70s TV show theme song, where it's just, I think pretty much towards the end of the album, I think Mark himself is getting tired of the concept of what he's doing, because he's like, I think essentially what he's planning on doing was like, hey, I'm just going to release a 2-hour-long album because I feel like it, not because it just naturally came about in the studio. No, he's just like, that's what I'm going to do, I'm just going to just write a bunch of shit and, you know, see what happens.
And I mean, this is one of two albums that he's putting out this year, and the other one will almost certainly be at least an hour long as well.
And they probably put out a third one. He'll probably put out a third one towards the end of the year. Who knows?
What a madman. Yeah. I forget who said it, but someone said this is like a hip-hop album, and what you were just talking about where like, oh, there's just so much material to discuss is like 100% spot on with that, because like, this is the memeiest indie album we've had in a very long time.
I will say, half intentionally, half unintentionally, this is probably one of the funniest albums I've heard in years. Like, I haven't heard a lot of people talking about this strong. Stranger Than Fiction is such a... or Stranger Than Paradise. That is a hilarious song. Like, when you really think about the concept of that song, that, like, Mark Kozlik like, went to the hotel where Elisa Lam died and tried to solve the mystery of her death himself for a weekend for fun.
Hey, Stefan, true crime is his passion, and that's his right as an American, okay?
Yeah, Mark Kozlik would die for true crime.
Run and tell that.
I can't with this album. He talks about the death of Elisa Lam on, like, multiple songs on the album. He also talks about it on Window Sash Heights.
You have three songs worth of build up to that moment. Like, it's a recurring theme.
Also, how the second half is basically dedicated to gun control, pretty much, and that, hey, let's use common sense and have stricter gun control because all these shootings happening. It's just It's so
yeah,
good.
I think I wrote either in the chat or like in the review of this I did for my school newspaper that like the second half at a certain point just turns into like Mark Kozlik has anxieties about terrorism.
I mean, this is essentially Mark Kozlik. It's essentially his Facebook feed, pretty much. Like, we're just like...
Because he doesn't have Facebook.
He doesn't have Facebook, so he has to make an album of what his Facebook feed would be.
Yeah, let's do some game theory.
Yeah, let's do some game theory.
Oh, God. All right, we got... Stefan, we got to talk about... What's the other album we got to talk about?
Talk about the other. I will just say as a final note, like, Common as Light and Love. Just what a delight. Problematic fave forever. That's what he is now.
And your problematic fave could never.
No, never. Anyways, moving on. This, I will not lie, I was not very prepared for this podcast, so I listened to this album this morning, but like, it lived up to my expectations. Is Shackleton and Vengeance Tenfold's new album, Spheric Ghost Transmits, which we will get into the pretentiousness of that later. Shackleton came out of like the mid 2000s experimental dubstep thing and like really was on like the far left side of that and just producing like weird out there shit. And Vengeance Tenfold is a frequent collaborator of his who's like a spoken word artist. And so typically he'll contribute lyrics like to the songs on occasions. And when the two of them have teamed up, they made for some of like the eeriest and most technically ambitious electronic music songs of like the 21st century, really. Blood on My Hands, Death Is Not Final, like just absolutely wild songs in terms of their complexity and sort of their tone. And the culmination of their collaboration was an album in 2012 called Music for the Quiet Hour, which was like an 80-minute long, like five-part song suite that, and this is where really Vengeance Tenfold lyrics, like in the case of this album too, like this is music for second year philosophy majors. Just like the pretension and conceptual whateverness of it is so out there that like Music from the Quiet Hour was about like a letter a guy was writing to his granddaughter in the past explaining the future to her, and somehow it was like a metaphor for politics. I don't know what this album Spheric Ghost Transmits about, but it's equally like pretentious and kind of goofy at times in terms of the vocals. But like, you know, Vengeance Tenfold is committed enough as a performer and Shackleton's as adept enough as a producer that like it still comes together to make like a really satisfying project. Like it's very long and sort of winding, which is a little bit of the appeal just because Shackleton's productions are so layered and dense on this thing that, yeah, it's just really consistently engaging and a lot better than I will say. Like I was kind of hankering for this album after last summer. Shackleton put out a collaborative album with it was this guy, like an Italian opera singer who's like a weird experimental theater dude named Ernesto Tomasini. That was called Devotional Songs. And like that guy, the vocals on that record, it really, because again, he's like a theater dude. So the title of that record really should have just been like featuring Vincent Price. Like most of the vocals were literally just like seven creepy spiders crawling on your skin. It was like, it worked sometimes and other times it did not, but this album really just works the whole way through. It's Shackleton and Vengeance Tenfold doing their thing as well as they tend to do it, I was really pleased by it, and I didn't know this album was coming out, so I was happy to see it show up on Pitchfork and be like, ah yes, I've been waiting like 5 years for new music from these guys. So if you're looking for some weird, creepy, very pretentious electronic music, this is going to be your jam this year.
Nice.
And that's that.
All right. Will, you got some albums you want to talk about, buddy?
Yeah, I do. So...
Well, yeah, say it. Well, just say it. Just say it.
So the first one, I'm kind of like y'all. This album this year hasn't blown me away yet. There's no album that like has to be in my top 10.
Except for.
Did I hear the word Japandroid? What?
Boy, she's done it.
She has no idea. Okay, so
please welcome Jeremiah to the podcast, everybody.
So, let's not beat around the bush. let's not beat around the bush. I'm wearing my Japandroid shirt, and you know, I just want to talk about this album. Is the most important album of 2017.
Hey, Jeremiah, can I ask for
yeah.
are you in the bathroom right now?
I am on the toilet right now.
Okay, that's what I thought. It's very echoey.
So, oh man, Japan Droids. So, this is the best album of all time. Let's just put it out there. It starts off with Near the Wild Heart of Life, and you're like,
so
all right.
I'm so sorry, Will. I'm so sorry.
All right, it's going. We're going. And he's like, the future's under fire. The past is gaining ground. And you're like, all right, that's it. I'm going to go start living authentically and make authentic life choices where I make choices and do things that are authentic to me, that are based on my own value system. I'm going to take command of my life. I'm going to be nearer to the wild heart of life, just like Stephen Dedalus is, Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. Where they got that quote from? I believe that quote is from the scene where he's chilling in the lake and then in the river by Dublin. He sees this hot girl like waiting out in the water. He's just like, oh! He just hits the nut button on the spot, and it's like, to err, to live, to make life out of life. Like, he was going to be like Dedalus the Artificer, but with words, because he was becoming a poet. And so essentially, what we're talking about is that Stephen Dedalus listened to Japan Droids and was like, this is it. I'm enlightened. So you know those memes where it's like Colbert Report, people watching the Colbert and seeing Japan Droids perform. Wow, this is so cheesy. Me, an enlightened intellectual named Stephen Dedalus, is the greatest of all time. That's exactly what happened there. So anyways, there's this one time I was listening to Japan Droids, and then someone texted me, they're like, yo, come over, and I was like, say no more, fam. And then I ended up in New Jersey. So what I'm trying to say is that Japan Droids are really important. This album is amazing. Even the songs that I didn't like at first, 3 and 4, True to Love and stuff, and then I'm Sorry for Not Finding You Sooner. Those both grew on me really, really a lot. Their concert was the greatest thing I've ever seen, and the last song, In a Body Like a Grave, is...
Oh, it's easily the best song ever written.
Don't mean to alarm anyone, but that's a catastrophic nut button. That's like the most important song I've heard all year. Because like, oh my god, you guys. Oh my god, you guys. You don't even, oh my god, it's so important.
I think a lot of people haven't actually heard that song.
I mean, like, they understand. They're like, oh, it's okay.
You can listen to that song?
With no drink or drug.
No.
You know, they did it at my show.
Song, but I'm talking about hearing that song.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, AJ. It's exactly what I'm talking about. In my show,
hearing
they closed
listening.
They closed with Body Like a Grave into House That Heaven Built. Oh, it was done. It was game over.
Yeah, you got to ashed. You got to Hacksaw Ridge me out of there.
I was I didn't know why I was crying in the club right now. Just kidding, I knew exactly why I was crying in the club. It's because of Japan Droids. Anyways, the bridge in that song. AJ, can you start me off on that bridge?
Oh, it's the greatest thing of all time.
The greatest thing of all time? It's like, age is a traitor and bit by bit, less love for life, less talk and shit. And you're like, oh, and he's like, remember, there's heaven in the hellest of holes, and a drink for the body is a dream for the soul. And you're like, At this point, you're like driving your car all over the highway, like trying to get every single lane at once. And he's like, what does he say after that? I lost my train of thought.
Will, so do you have any thoughts on this album?
What matters?
You chose
that
this album. Do you have any thoughts? Will?
Hear the Wild Heart of Life is the Japan Droids River. This is your buddy Jeremiah signing off. God bless you.
Wait, Jeremiah, you could have talked about Jay Som.
Travel well, sleep well.
Okay, so anyways, I mean that's about it. And honestly, I think it's probably the least consistent album. I think there's some. I mean, my opinion hasn't changed since we did the episode about it. I think in the middle is a little bit rough, but it has the highest highs I'll hear in music all year, at the beginning and end of the album. So it's still definitely up there for me. And the other album I want to talk about is J Som, Everybody Works. If Japan Droids has the highs but not the consistency, then this album is the opposite. I mean, it's a grower, not a shower. But this is probably the most consistently enjoyable and aesthetically pleasing musical document of 2017. J Som, in case you're a freaking loser living under a freaking rock, don't know if she is. She's the hot new thing this year. Melina Duarte. I still haven't heard her name. I just read it, so I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. But She's 22 years old, diaper dandy, and she's released, technically she released her debut last year. She released it on Bandcamp for free, Turn Into, just a collection of songs. Good songs, good songs. And it caught fire, and she got signed by Polyvinyl Records, and she released her debut album, Everybody Works, and it's an album that if you like Mitski, and if you like Japanese breakfast, which I know we all do, and this is an essential listening for you. Gotta get on this, because it has that same dreamy production, indie rock, but also the dreamy production of Japanese breakfast that I think will resonate with the boyos in here.
Whoa, yeah. Hold on. Sorry to interrupt you real quick. Chuck Berry just died.
Whoa!
What a legend!
Oh, what?
I'm not joking.
Yeah, he's from St. Louis.
Yeah, because like I found out because he got posted on my St. Louis thing. Apparently, like the
yeah. He has an album coming out like next month.
Oh shit! Well, it looks like we got a new
Black Star.
Oh boy!
I saw this.
he was like pretty old though, right? He was like in his 90s.
He's 90.
Yeah, he's 90. Yeah.
That's wow.
I saw this video a couple weeks
still
ago.
Still though, I mean, that's a bummer.
I saw this really, like it's random. I saw this video, though, of, like, him, like, he was, like, some, like, sex tape with him in the 80s, and he was some girl, and he, like, told her to lick his butt, and he farted on his face. It was some wild shit.
Yeah, the 80s, man.
In the beginning, he's, like, they're sitting in the bathtub. She's, like, don't kiss me. You smell like piss. Which I lied that he peed on her and then refused to kiss her because she smelled like piss.
What a goddamn legend.
Let us all hope he died how he lived.
He was a damn freak.
No.
Oh, boy.
Anyways, apparently he was, like, watching children with those cameras, though. It wasn't good. He got, like, house arrest for a couple of years. Anyways.
Well, damn.
Johnny be good, boy.
He stole it from Marty McFly.
He did. Yeah.
Actually, a white person invented
Listen
rock and roll.
To this. Yeah. What did you think?
Oh, boy. All right.
So, yeah, Everybody Works is a good album. It's, getting back on course, it's a tour de force in indie rock. It has kind of a ambient-ish songs. It has, like, a Ramones sound to it. It has lots of Death Cab for Cutie influence here. Lots of good stuff. And it's a very... It's very, what's the word for it? Lots of great transitions. It's sequenced well. You don't hear a lot of well-sequenced albums these days. Every track complements the next year, though. So definitely check it out and listen to it.
I will just say, very briefly about Japan Droids, because I wasn't on that episode. I feel like such a dick for not liking this album, because everything's there, like the songwriting, the melodies, the sound, it's all there, but it lacks, like, the desperation the first two albums had, and I feel so bad listening to it going, like, oh, you guys were so much more fun when you were basically homeless. Like, it's not a thing I'm proud to think, but
it's true, though.
Yeah,
folks.
Okay. I like the grown-up Japan Droids take, TBH.
It's definitely like a valid direction for them to go on. It's just like less resonant than, you know, the if we don't make this music, we're going to starve to death aesthetic of celebration rock.
Mm-hmm. I will say I'm somewhat on the same page as Stefan, except I've never really listened to JSON before. I've only listened to this, like, one time. And I was like, oh, this is okay. I don't know. I'll probably give some more listens in the coming weeks, just because, like...
I think.
I got really into girl band, and I was like, JSON, and no, I want to get really into Canadian post-punk and Irish noise rock. That's my mood. But yeah, I'll try to give us another listen soon.
Big Mood 2017. JSON is not Big Mood. Yeah, definitely recommend to AJ as soon as this we're done. You got to get on that.
Oh, I'm about to get on that.
Yeah, boy, he about to do it.
So, yeah.
Everybody Works, Album of the Year.
Oh, goddamn, yeah, he's
he,
back.
He gets, I'm okay with him being here this time. I was talking about Everybody Works, kind of hit a brick wall. Take it from here.
Oh, well, I was just coming in to say that and then leave because I wanted to troll you guys, but while I'm preparing to set up my bath, I can actually talk about it.
We pretty much have the same two favorite albums of the year right now.
Yeah, I mean, Everybody Works is actually, right now, Real Estate's probably taking it for me. But Everybody Works is a really, really wonderful, wonderful, wonderful album. I've listened to it a few times now. It doesn't have the same... It's definitely more of a, like... I mean, the natural comparison, of course, is Psychopomp. She and Japanese Breakfast are...
besties.
They're besties. They're very much making a similar vein of music from a similar position. And, of course, we always feel bad when we're, like, lumping Mitski and Japanese Breakfast and J-Som together. But, I mean, they did tour together, and they are sort of, like, an area of... I mean, they are, like... cobbled together for a reason. They make really, really interesting music, especially Japanese Breakfast and J-Som, who I'm more familiar with and like more. They're really pushing the boundaries of indie rock, I think. I think they're just making really beautiful, really, really smart and just progressive music with, like, because I was thinking about Psychopomp, and someone made the comment that Psychopomp is like it really like we were listening to 80s music, and they said, oh, you know, this actually, all this like 80s stuff really reminds me of Psychopomp. I can see why you like the album so much. And I was like, whoa, that blew my mind, because I realized that Psychopomp was really like emo and 80s dream pop like mixed together, and I was like, oh. So I was thinking about J-Som. So that's kind of
so like, this is
yeah, and so but J-Som is more it's more for me it's more psychedelic. It's more dreamy and
kind of.
And truly on, like, the it's because I'm listening to Real Estate all day. More on, like, the Real Estate side. More like, I mean, it's I think they're both taking indie rock in amazing directions, but also kind of different ones. For me, Japanese Breakfast is way more, like, deep down, it's pretty punk. She, like, her music is, she's, like, a punk rocker at heart. Whereas J-Som is definitely more of a pop artist, and I just think...
She's more emo.
Yeah, she, I think, no, I'd say Jay Brecky's more emo. I mean, listen. You should listen to Little Big League.
Is yeah.
Little Big League is
from an emo pop punk background.
That Philadelphia emo baby.
You love to hear it.
And then, but it's all right. Let me finish my thought. And J-Som, it's. I mean, this album is. Oh my gosh, it's gorgeous.
It's Heroes. Anything
is great.
It's just an album that you have to like listen to it and like give it time, and then like you just
yeah. It's like it, again, it reminds me a lot of because I've been listening to Real Estate all. It really reminds me a lot of a Real Estate album. All the songs like are really actually immediately pretty grabbing, but it doesn't. It's sort of one that it's got a lot of nuance. And she's really evolved as a songwriter, and I mean it's really really well made. It sounds gorgeous. Oh my god, it sounds amazing. And she really just does really really new and innovative things that aren't really being done, you know, doesn't feel like by anybody. I mean, we have your Dave Longstreths of the world who. Are like,
well, indie rock is dead, so I have to rap on my first song on my album.
And then you have people who are like, indie rock is the greatest thing on earth. And then they release Psychopomp. And now you have J-Som releasing a fabulous record, which doesn't have quite like the narrative heft, Psychopomp. But like, I mean, I do think these two artists are most certainly companions. And especially how they tackle themes of alienation and stuff that comes from their Asian American heritage. Recommended reading The Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan or The Woman Warrior by Maxine Hong Kingston. Very important. But, I think it's... And it's so, yes, the Asian American experience has always been a really interesting one in America that has not seen representation in popular music. Like,
Simply hasn't.
Yeah, except for like
simply has not.
Like it's like not. So they're really saying something which is new and refreshing, and they're saying it in a way with this music which I just haven't heard anything like it before. I mean, yeah, we can trace the genres, but like, you know, when you think about Psychopomp, you're like, all right, so it's like singer-songwriter, but it's also emo, but it's also dream pop, but it's also like jangle pop, but it's also like garage rock, it's also lo-fi. But it's like, no, the genre is psychopop, not psychopomp, but psychopop. Which is part of the reason why she named it.
Boy, he motherfucking did it.
Yeah, it's like this. That's the genre that I'm going to start calling them from now on. Because I mean, this is some next level stuff. And I mean, maybe it's not going to be as like trendsetting as shoegaze was, even though, let's be honest, LP2 will be the next Loveless.
See, I'm going to agree with you here. I don't think this is like a mind-blowing revolutionary album.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not going to be that. Except for maybe for me, it'll be that. But maybe not for everybody, it'll be that. But regardless, I just think this is a phenomenal debut record, and I'm going to listen to it a lot. I'm going to listen to it for a long time. And for me, it's kind of like Courtney Barnett's album. It's just immaculate. It's well done. Unlike Courtney Barnett's album, this one is really like forward-thinking and just it's just new and it's fresh and it's incredible. And I'm really excited to hear more from her. I'm really excited to listen to this album on repeat this summer. And good shit, man. Good shit.
LP2 coming soon.
LP2 so soon.
Oh. LP2 on the way.
Oh. I cannot wait. I was listening to all kinds of Little Big League the other day. I'm sorry, this is turning into a 30-second Japanese breakfast jerk. I was listening to all kinds of Little Big League recently, and like, I think people forget this, but she is a fucking disgustingly good like songwriter and also an amazing guitar player. It shows up a little bit on Psychopomp, but like
the Heft solo is
Solo, like Everybody Wants to Love You solos are really great. But if you listen, but like her emo, like it's, I mean, she's in her rock background, her like punk emo pop punk background is like, I mean, she's a masterclass songwriter in that respect.
She's like best friends with Christian Holden, man. Pack it up,
yeah, exactly. Emo. Like, yeah, true. They're playing Sellers of Catan. Yeah. You can only play Sellers of Catan with people you respect and trust. Because that's the only way friendships are broken.
Okay, it's way too late for this joke because I forgot to say it whenever we were talking about Sun Kil Moon. But you know, I think the story of like of Goodness is that Christian Holden almost every song that he wrote for Goodness, it's on the album. Like the album is like written specifically how it was. That's basically how the Sun Kil Moon album was written. Was every song that was how it was meant to be. That was a bad joke.
No, you see, that's wrong. He wrote two albums and then went, nah, this is gonna be one.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm gonna shut up now before we start wrapping up the podcast.
Oh yeah.
Wait, are we just done after Will's? So can I just like stay on for the next 5 minutes?
I mean, if you have some albums you want to talk about that we haven't talked about,
it'll just be rapid fire mode for me.
All right, hurry up.
Well, my favorite album of the year so far is Chanel by Frank Ocean. It's pretty short. It's like about 33 minutes and 30 seconds long, but which is a really remarkable short album. But yeah, you thought that you think about this. This album is one song long. And it says single next to it. I'm not sure why it says that, but Chanel is the fucking greatest. Oh my god. Oh my god. I've literally listened to this song like 60 times the past like 48 hours. Not even 48. 24 hours.
It's crazy how we got like two great Frank Ocean songs so soon after Blonde, because I was like, oh, we're gonna have to wait 5 years again.
Dude, and for a while I thought Slide was better, and then yesterday I was listening to Chanel on repeat, and I put in Slide like briefly, and then I ended up looping in my recently played, and I was like, you know, Chanel, because Chanel is amazing, because it's literally like, it goes through three movements, and he does it so seamlessly and so catchily that like, when you're listening to part one, you just want to hear part two. When you're listening to part two, you just want to hear part three. When you're listening to part three, you just want to hear part one again. And so you can just keep listening to it over and over again. I'm not getting tired of it because every like melody, because it switches up the melody every single line.
I think it both could and should have been on Blonde.
I honestly think I'm glad it's on its own, because if it wasn't, I wouldn't listen to it on repeat. Because like, okay, so first of all, I've talked about this a lot. No, I actually haven't. I've just changed the name of the chat to this, but they ban my visa, my Amex and MasterCard. That little vocal melody is like one of the greatest things I've ever heard in my life, and he uses it only for that line, and that like boggles my mind. Frank Ocean is ungodly talented. He is like, I mean, he's like, oh my god, Chanel is so good, you guys. I'm actually about to go take a bath and listen to it on repeat. I was reflecting, and I was like, damn, this is like Person Pitch the song. If Person Pitch was only like 3 minutes and 30 seconds long, this would be Person Pitch. Because it's just like, it literally loops on itself too. That's the other weird thing. It's like, what? How does he do it? And then the other album that I was listening to today was the Real Estate album, which, I mean, it's a Real Estate album. It's great. They're consistent. It's ideal. Not ideal suck. It's just ideal. It's an important distinction. Days was really jangle pop, and obviously that's a classic. Atlas is great, and Atlas is pretty alt country in its little way. And this one is, they do change it up every single album. This one is definitely much more dreamy, much more hazy, much more psychedelic. AJ made comparisons to early Tame Impala. And I mean, it's just, and the songwriting is great. I was listening, the first three times I listened to it, I was actually accidentally on shuffle. But it didn't really matter. Diamond Eyes, the bassist song on this album, is one of, easily his best song. And I think one of the best Real Estate songs. And the last song, which I think is called Saturdays, with this little like fake buildup into, and then you're like, oh shit, they're going like a slow on us. It sounds like it's just been slowed down like 50%. And then it goes boom and it hits you and you're like, ooh, yeah. So yeah, Real Estate, really good. LP2, already album of the year. So
oh shit,
look forward to that.
Oh shit, hold on. I forgot to mention. I didn't say I was because I didn't know if I could talk about it that much. The new Shushu album is really fucking good. That's
yeah, Pitchfork gave it a 6.5. Man,
fuck Pitchfork. Fuck Pitchfork. Fuck. Hey, you know what? Pitchfork gave. Let's see. They gave Psychopomp a 7.8, right? Or is it
7.9?
Yeah, that's the best score of all time. Yeah, it's the best score of all time. Yep. 100%.
Since I'm near my bathtub, let me remind you of a certain 2005 record from the New York based rock band The National called The Alligator. No, it's just called Alligator. It's not called The Alligator.
7.9,
not best new music. Gimme Fiction by Spoon, 7.9, not best new music. It still bothers me that they didn't even review the Gimme Fiction reissue. They could have easily just like gone and slapped like an 8.5 on that and called it a day. And instead, you're gonna have kids who are like in 10 years and be like, "Well, I like this Spoon band a lot." They're gonna check their own on Pitchfork, and Pitchfork's gonna be like, best new music, 7.9, best new music," and they're gonna be like, "Well, clearly this album's bad." Because I almost did that. I was like, "Wow, this album clearly sucks," and it's not. It's good. So Pitchfork, be more responsible.
They only gave Hot Thoughts a 7.4.
Yeah, that was kind of. You see, Pitchfork is just kind of on like a power trip these days, but they just want to like kill their idols. You know, they just want to like get them out of there.
Rock is dead. You heard it on Pitchfork.com.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm a little bit worried about Real Estate. I think it's probably just gonna get like an 8.5 or some shit because it's like Real Estate. They don't make bad records.
Mid seven.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. That's really what I'm worried about because they've just been hitting everybody with that this year, and it's like okay. So kudos to them for giving J-Som an 8.6. I think that bodes well for LP2's
chances. Yeah, really, that's
chances.
All you need to know is that it's a rock album that got best new music in the year 2017.
Yeah.
That's the advertising I need.
But also, wait, can we talk about Pitchfork's South by Southwest coverage on their Snapchat? And by that I mean...
Oh, iconic.
And by that I mostly mean Japanese Breakfast because she's the one who started it all. I think that pretty much guarantees like a 9+, right?
I mean, the record itself is going to guarantee a 9+. Yeah, plus.
Of course.
So we should probably wrap up this podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Thank you.
More life is on the way.
More life is on the way.
Wait, hold on. I need clarification.
So soon.
What? I tweeted this
guys,
a little
it
while
ago, 30 minutes
still
ago,
confused.
By the way.
What, Jeremy?
What is More Life? What is More Life?
It's the new Drake album.
Why is it on the way?
It's the new Drake
album. Wait, is Drake
album
pregnant?
No.
Wait, is Drake pregnant? God. Is he having a child tonight? Is that why it's called More Life? Because that's why, because there literally is.
We're going to end this podcast.
More Life.
Done.
No, listen, this is important. Drake is one of Beyonce's twins, and the globalists planted him there. And they're going to
Big Globe.
They're putting Drake in our freaking fetus.
Wait, let's talk about Big Globe for a second, all right?
No, we can't. We got in the podcast.
We're not talking about Big Globe.
That puts More Life on the way.
Okay, we're wrapping up. It's done. Podcast is done. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Make sure to like us on Facebook.
Wait. I have an
follow
important
us on
message.
Symbol. Make
wait,
sure to follow
wait.
Us on Twitter. All the links and stuff are down in the description. If you want to hear Jeremiah
wait a minute.
Talking
wait
about
a minute.
Whatever
hey.
Jeremiah is talking
wait.
About, go to his Twitter. At Jiro
yeah, go to my Twitter. At Jiro, my Twitter game today has been flames. I took silly 60 milligrams of Vyvanse, and I was just straight zooping. And I was
Oh, really? We can't tell. We can't tell, Jeremiah. We really can't tell.
Oh, no, I'm actually, like, on the come down. I'm about to take what are these called? I'm about to take a...
Quaalude.
Klonopin.
Ah, bring
let's take
back
a Klonopin.
The, bring
be
back
cash.
The fucking Quaaludes.
Bring back the fucking Quaaludes.
That was honestly one of my
favorite podcast has just turned into like the last act of Mulholland Drive where like more shit keeps happening but it starts making less and less sense. That's
does
the last half hour of this episode.
I'm on my phone so I can't access it. There you go. Wait, I have one last important announcement to make. We already talked about following me on Twitter. Also follow Whale Shark Rocky on Twitter. Her content lately has just been unreal, and she's rhyming. She started to use like rhymes lately, and every morning I wake up and see Whale Shark Rocky, and I'm like, wow, what a beautiful world we live in. But my last thing I want to say is, AJ,
no, we're done.
And it got me all fired up.
Bye, guys. We're done. We're done. We're done. We're done.